Titus 2, starting verse 3, the older women or the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober or to be wise, to love their husbands, to love their children. Be loving. Teach or train or school the young women to love. This morning, I pray most of all that this will stir you to love. I was talking to Jan last evening about the lesson today, and I was sharing some of the things, and I said, oh, Jan, what if I miss the heart of it? What if I miss the most important part of it? And I guess that's my deepest concern in sharing with you, that maybe somehow I miss that kernel of truth that God so desperately wants put across. But I have to trust Him in this, that He will do that. And as I went through the lesson, she said, oh, Mom, if it just stirs them to love each other, to love their husbands and love their children more, that would be the most you could. It's all you could want out of your heart. You're to be trained to love. This is not a class or a lesson this morning so much on how to. This class is simply to tell you from the Lord to love each other, to love your husbands, to love your children. Because we're supposed to be teachers of good things, I'm going to stop right where it says that they may teach the young women to love this morning. And that's what we're going to deal with, although it will include husbands and children. Older women must know these things. If you're an older woman, you think, oh, well, that lesson's just for younger women. Not so. This lesson is for you, too. The older women must know them to teach them. And if you've walked with the Lord a long, long time and you already know these things, this is a refresher course. If you are new in the Lord, and sometimes we have older women in the room who are new in the Lord, and they wish they could go back to Sunday school, and they don't know all the Bible stories, and they haven't had all these years to know all these things. So this is a learning course for you. It's kind of a catch-up course. You know, when you go back to college, when you're in your 40s or your 50s, you have some catching up to do. Well, that's kind of what this is. This is a good place for all our mother-in-laws to study and meditate. I think that the mother-in-law experience can be one of the most wonderful opportunities or disastrous experiences in relationships. How many in this room have mother-in-laws? Oh boy, then all of you know what I mean. How many of you in this room are mothers-in-laws or mothers? Aha, good. This is very timely for all of us. I've been blessed with a precious daughter-in-law and a precious son-in-law, so I feel super blessed, and I had the most fantastic mother-in-law possible who was like a mother to me. So it's a little difficult for me to give advice to mother-in-laws except through my own failures. I do better from there than from Mom Smith's perspective, because she was practically perfect. Practically, you know, after all, she was a mother-in-law. As a mother-in-law, what are you teaching your son-in-law or your daughter-in-law about love? That can be very painful to us sometimes, can't it? What are you teaching them? If you have been a Christian many years, you've had a greater responsibility to teach or to train this son-in-law or daughter-in-law in this kind of love we'll be studying today. And I especially want you as mother-in-laws and daughter-in-laws to think about today. That can be a very, very strained, difficult relationship. Sometimes the in-law relationship can be so strained it will take lots and lots of prayers, lots of grace, lots of humility. But if your desire is to see the marriage grow and flourish, the results will be worth the effort. For all you daughters-in-law present, as we go into the lesson today, ask God to show you ways to show love to your mother-in-law. Now, at this point in the lesson, you may not have a desire to do it, but I pray that by the end of the lesson, the Lord will stir your heart so you'll see how it's possible. And you mother-in-laws who have difficult children-in-laws, God will show you a way this morning that you can love them and you even will want to love them. And I know of no book in the Bible that points out the mother-in-law-daughter-in-law relationship more beautifully, more lovingly than the book of Ruth. I suppose the single most quality by which the world judges us is, as Christians, is our love. If we're loving God as we should, we'll love others as we should, and morally and socially we'll walk as representatives of God and as representatives of God ought to walk. Jesus said in Matthew 22:37, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind, And then in verse 39, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. This was not a new concept, this agape love. It was taught by Moses, remember, in Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter. And the 10 commandments comprise of loving God. The first 4 are loving God. The last 6 are loving your neighbor as yourself. That's why Jesus said he was the fulfillment of the law. And this is the fulfillment of the law, to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself. The word for this kind of love in Greek is agape, A-G-A-P-E. It actually means laying down your life, your will, your rights for another. And it's best shown in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 to 7. And I've had classes where we had to memorize that, and I would encourage each one of you to memorize that. It seems to work out those principles in your life, and as Jesus' love flows through you, you know how you ought to behave. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 to 7. The most beautiful picture of this agape love is God in giving Jesus for our sins. He gave his most prized possession, the one that meant the very most to him, he gave to be crucified for you. That is the deepest love ever shown to mankind, John 3:16. But by the word love here in Titus 2:4, now this is interesting. It is not agape. This is not agape. Love your husbands and love your children. I'm supposed to train and teach, and the older women in the body are to train and teach you. Not agape here. Interesting. Agape should have been worked out in your life before you got to Titus 2. The word, you know, it's way back in Corinthians, and it's back in John, and it's back in the beginning of the word. In Titus 2:4, the word here is phileo, P-H-I-L-E-O. It's a verb. Phileo means to love in the sense of being friendly, to delight in or long for, to love to do or to do with pleasure. It represents tender affection. This is the kind of love that God wants you to love your husband and your children and others with. The same word is used in the New Testament many times. It's used in John 3:35 of God's love for Jesus, a love with a tender affection. It's used in John 5:20 as a form of God's love for Jesus. Philia, P-H-I-L-I-A, is the noun form. Now, this love cannot be commanded. Agape love is commanded. This commandment I give unto you, that you love one another. Jesus commanded that you love one another. But this, phileo, is purely voluntary. But it should be the result of agape love flowing through you. Phileo springs from agape. When God's love is at work in you, you will want to do this kind of love. And this is a doing kind of love more than a being kind of love. And that's what's so fascinating and exciting about phileo love. It's the thing you kind of always wanted to do, but it was so difficult because you didn't have step 1, 2, and 3 that I want to go through with you this morning. The why of showing this kind of love. Why should I show my husband this kind of love? I want you to write this on the tablets of your heart this morning. I want you to ask the Holy Spirit to really get this principle across to you. If this principle is in your life, it will change every motivation in you. You will do things for a whole different reason than you've ever done them before. You will love your husband for one central reason. You will love your children for one central reason. And that essential reason for displaying this love is because it pleases the heart of God. In Revelation 4:11, the Bible tells us that we were created, all things were created for God's pleasure. They are and they were created for God's pleasure. That is what you're here for today. You have been born to bring pleasure to the heart of God. That is your essential reason for being. Now, whether you ever do that by your manner of life is your choice. But that is your purpose of being. And you will never know pleasures at the right hand of God unless you walk with this desire in your heart to be pleasing to God. Listen to me carefully. This is so important. The whole Christian experience hinges on this particular thing. Everything you do as a Christian should be done because it brings pleasure to the heart of God. not because it brings pleasure to you. Isn't that very contrary to the world today and the world's philosophy for women? Not because it pleases me, but because it pleases the heart of God. Colossians 3:23, whatsoever you do, do it heartily unto the Lord. It doesn't say just a few things hither, helter-skelter, hit and miss, but whatever you do, do it heartily, with joy, with thanksgiving, with rejoicing unto the Lord. Is that the way you served your husband's breakfast this morning? Heartily and joyfully and happily, you slammed the egg down in front of him. I don't know how you did it. You probably did it with love. If I'm a little harsh today and you aren't living in that place, don't you receive it. But if you're not as careful and conscientious on this path as you should be, take it to heart and just let it kind of, you know, enter in and bring some new a new relationship into your home. Okay, the why of this kind of love is because it brings joy and pleases the heart of God. Ramona Jensen talked about going to Germany, and when she got to the place that she was staying, how one of the Lutheran sisters there came out and carried her very heavy suitcase, and she was above 60 and Ramona's 28, and Ramona said, "Oh no, I'll carry it." "No, no," she said, "it would please me to carry your suitcase." And then Ramona went on to tell all the wonderful things they did. They put her favorite color in the room, her favorite scripture, her favorite drink, her favorite flower. She got to dinner that night and around her place. She didn't have any trouble finding her place because ringing her plate were her favorite flowers, some chocolates, and then that wasn't enough. She sat down to eat and they stood up and sang to her. And she found out why. You know why? They didn't do it because Ramona Jensen was special. She wasn't particularly special, as she said. They did it for everybody who went to that place. Do you know why? Because it brought joy to the heart of God to show love. And that's my whole lesson this morning. It brings joy to the heart of God for you to show love, whether it's to others, to your husband, to your children, whomever. And it's not a reciprocal kind of love. It's not the kind of love we see in marriages so often. You do this for me and I'll do that for you. We trade, we barter in marriages, don't we? Or he didn't kiss me goodbye? Okay, tonight, zero. Yeah? You know, a lot of you are that way. A lot of you have had experiences like that. You know, he didn't do this, okay. You know, we punish. We punish and we play games and we do. That's not Jesus' love. We do whatever pleases the heart of the Father. It's an unselfish thing. This phileo springs from agape, and it is an unselfish kind of love. All right, the path to this kind of love. This love is the result of agape love. Agape love must be first. If it tried because of reading a book or hearing a lecture and the agape love is not producing it, it just won't work. And I think everybody who's any kind of a wife at all has tried it. Have you ever read a book on marriage and it said to do a certain thing and you were so angry with him, you hated the ground he walked on, and you fixed this dinner and you set it before him and he ignored it and you felt like throwing it down the garbage disposal? And that happens if you do it because you do not have this agape love motivating you to do it. If you're doing it just to please your husband, it's not enough. It has to come from that spring within of agape love. And how do we achieve that agape love? First of all, the interior life has to be right or the exterior will be phony. If the interior is not right, the exterior will be phony. And you can do all kinds of nice things for him and it's not going to minister, because there is a body language and an unspoken language that gets across to our husbands. And he knows when it's coming from deep love and when it's coming because maybe you read a book or maybe some program hit you and you decided to do it. And there's a great big difference. Three steps I've chosen to phileo love. They're simple, but they're necessary, and I want you to write these down. Step one, I hope that all of you in this room are already there. You must be in a right relation to God through Christ. You must be born again. If you're not born again this morning, the rest of the lesson will be meaningless to you. You must be born again. That's first. Step two, you must not be carrying unchristlike attitudes and feelings towards others. Now, that's not just towards your husband. That's towards anybody. In other words, Christ's agape love, as set forth in 1 Corinthians 13:4-7, must be at work in your life. There must be that forgiveness and that long-suffering and that kindness and enduring all things, believing all things. You must not be carrying unchrist-like attitudes and feelings towards others. You mustn't have resentment, bitterness, anger, unforgiveness. No matter how the other person has wronged you, these attitudes will block your love flow, and you cannot have phileo, working in your life as you should unless agape is at work in your life. If you have these bad attitudes, for instance, bitterness, in Hebrews 12:15, Paul speaks of a root of bitterness. He says, beware of a root of bitterness, lest it springing up defile many. If there's bitterness in your heart towards anyone, it will mar any relationship. The bitterness doesn't just touch the person you're bitter against. It touches your children. They see it in you. They pick up from you that bitterness. Your husband picks up on that bitterness. All the people who come in contact with you, it's there. It's like a great big scar or a flaw. It's there, and it comes through in attitudes. If there's bitterness against anybody, Psalm 139:23-24 in the Living Bible, search me, O God, and know my heart. Point out anything that makes you sad. Point out anything in my life that grieves you, that makes you sad. Any attitudes, any feelings that I have about people that are not of you, Lord, get them out of my life. Now, Jesus provides release from every attitude and every feeling that is not from Him. Step one in this is ask God to search. This is step one under step two, okay? Ask God to search your heart and reveal these to you, as set forth in Psalm 139:23-24. Confess your feelings to Him honestly. Don't say, I don't hate. If you do hate, He already knows anyhow. Read the rest of Psalm 139. He knows everything about you. He knew about you before you were ever even conceived. Okay, confess your feelings to Him honestly. Ask His forgiveness and healing of all your wounds. Some of you just have wounds that are just open and bleeding as you've come in. The hurts are so deep. And there cannot be release from the bitterness and the resentment and all these other emotions without a healing taking place. You can't just put a Band-Aid on it. You've got to have some ointment put on it, some salve and some healing balm put on those wounds, so that you can, otherwise the bitterness will just fester and become infected. Okay, step two was ask His forgiveness and healing of all your wounds. Psalm 147:3, He healeth the broken in heart and bindeth up all their wounds. Don't you love that? Three, pray for the person that has hurt you. Ouch. That's an owie. Pray for the person that has hurt you and ask God to meet his or her deepest emotional need. I've used it over and over and over again in my own life. Pray for the person that has hurt you and ask God to meet his or her deepest emotional needs. Now, I didn't mean that I've been hurt that much. I mean that I pray that God will meet everyone's deepest emotional needs. You should pray that whether a person needs it on the surface or not. We all need our deepest emotional needs met. And God, who created us, is the one person who can meet them. And he knows how to provide circumstances that fulfill it, especially for you mamas raising children alone and divorced women and widows. You need God to meet your deepest emotional needs. There isn't that one person to share with as there was when you had a husband. And for the single girls who haven't had a husband, God needs to meet your deepest emotional needs, and He will. All right? By faith, see it is done. Take it by faith. See it is completed. Refuse to think angry, ugly thoughts about the person. Okay? Refuse it. Satan tries to put them in your mind all the time and bring up, remember what they did then? In 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 to 7, one of the things is love doesn't keep any account of wrong done against it. Love is not a bookkeeper of bad things people did against you. Refuse to think angry, ugly thoughts about the person. And this is something that God gave me that has helped me immeasurably. It may not work for you, but it does for me. Picture them in the presence of God. I just picture them before the throne of God with the light of God flowing through them, cleansing, healing, changing, restoring, working miracles in them. And I also picture them as God's responsibility. You know, I've said that to the Lord. Lord, they're your responsibility. Remember Moses in the wilderness when the children of Israel start complaining and carrying on against Moses? He said, God, they're your children. You know, they're your responsibility. And they are God's responsibility. Okay, picture them in the presence of God with his light just flowing through them in light. Dispels darkness, brings warmth, changes, cleanses. Think of what laser beams do now. Can even heal a detached retina in the eye. All right, number four under step two. If you have trouble giving up these feelings, gaze on Jesus. Just look at Jesus, who was reviled, rejected, despised, even crucified. Yet he never stopped loving. The reason I'm going this route this morning, as I told you before, you cannot have phileo love without having this agape love and this cleansing first. It will be phony, it'll be wood, hay, and stubble, it'll burn, it won't last, and it won't bear the fruit that is eternal and everlasting. Remember Stephen, stones were thrown at him, yet he prayed forgiveness for those people. Just as the stones were being thrown and his life was ebbing out, he said, Lord, I pray that you lay not this sin to their charge. Jesus taught, if you don't forgive, you will be tormented. Read the parable. The man who did not forgive was turned over to his tormentors. Matthew 18, verses 34 and 35. And unforgiveness is tormenting. The thoughts keep coming back and the feelings inside and the blood vessels are constricted. Very bad for you physically. You can harm your body immeasurably just through unforgiveness. For your own good this morning, practice this. Just for you. It might be a selfish reason, but it'll work unselfishness in you. This is a continual work in your life. That you don't just suddenly have agape and that's it forever and you love everybody and there's always unforgiveness and my, isn't it marvelous? It's not like that. It is a continual work. It's a daily work. When anyone crosses your will and your path and you feel these things springing up, you go to the Lord right then and there and ask him to work his love in your heart for that person and that situation. We live in an imperfect world with imperfect people and a wicked adversary who always enjoys destroying relationships, and the relationship he's mostly after in this day and age seems to be the marriage relationship. And he loves also to rob you of your wholeness and make you an emotional misfit. Or I was reading the other day about a wife who was an emotional porcupine. Her husband couldn't get near her because there were all the bristles. Have any of you known a wife like that? If you do not have a desire to forgive, this is point six under step two, if you do not have a desire to forgive, ask God to begin that work in your life. Ask him. If you're sitting here this morning, you're going, I just can't, I don't want to, they've wronged me so badly and the wound is so deep, forget them. You just say, God, I know that attitude's wrong. I ask you today to give me the desire to forgive that one or that ten, whatever there is in your life, however many people there are. And he is faithful. You can rely on his faithfulness. All of a sudden, one of these days, there will be a little glimmer of light, and you'll start thinking, well, maybe I should work on forgiveness there a little bit, and a little bit more, a little bit more. And all of a sudden, you'll be walking in love as you continue in this prayer and asking God and desiring his will, because you know it will please him if you forgive them. This is the love at work in the heart of the woman whose husband is an alcoholic and unfaithful, a workaholic, not a Christian. I had a woman come to me recently and ask if they could have special classes for husbands who are not, for wives of husbands who are not Christians. And there are husbands who are Christians who are some of these things, and they're cruel and they're rejecting, and you go through the fire living with them. Some of you have tried to live in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter. Somebody said, oh, if your husband's not a Christian, you must do what it says in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter. And you read, oh, I'm supposed to have a meek and quiet spirit, and I just can't. I'm so hurt, and I'm so angry, and I'm so bitter, and I'm so all of these things. And so you try to work up this meek and quiet spirit, and it just isn't working out. It's because you have to go the way of the cross. You have to go this way. It's the only way. The agape love has to flow before the meek and quiet spirit begins to come out of it. Don't get the cart before the horse. It simply will not work. Okay, when this 1 Corinthians 13:14, 7, agape love is flowing in the wife whose husband is unsaved, who is not walking with Jesus, or who is saved and who is rejecting and cruel and all these other things, she desires to be the woman described in 1 Peter 3, who walks in the meek and quiet spirit and whose behavior is pleasing unto the Lord. And by her pure behavior, her husband will be won to the Lord, the Bible promises. She shows forth loving conduct. So many times when we're dealing with women whose husbands have been unfaithful, you know, the one thing the woman wants to do, and I've seen this over and over again, she wants revenge. And so she goes out and starts looking for some guy to fulfill that place or to get even with him. And then it is a disaster and much harder to repair the marriage. It isn't that she didn't care for her husband. It's just that she wants to get even. And I caution you today, take the way of the cross. Go to 1 Peter 3. Walk in agape love. Let that pure conduct come forth. If he's that way, God will work in his life. If you walk in agape love and you walk in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, and you display that meek and quiet spirit that God wants you to do, then he's God's responsibility, and God will work in his life. It is not your responsibility to change your husband. Listen to me, every one of you in this room. Unfortunately, God didn't put that in our hands. Wouldn't that be marvelous? I think we'd have more wrecks on the horizon of life than are imaginable if it were given unto us to change them. No, God can change them. He sees the end from the beginning. He knows what's good for them, and he knows what will not work in their life. So you leave the changing unto God, but you walk in this 1 Corinthians 13, 4-7, this agape love, loving God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. This is a good example, this meek and quiet spirit of phileo at work because of agape. The outward behavior is produced by the inward love, the love for Jesus. It has to come out of your love for God first. Your desire to please God gives you the desire to walk in a meek and quiet spirit. Okay, the woman's natural reaction could be anything from sullen silence to screaming rage. Maybe it's well deserved by him for his horrible behavior. But if she's chosen to walk in God's love, then she will be desiring to please God and will be obedient to his word. Step three, since this is a way of revealing your love outwardly by attitude and behavior, you must know how the person needs you to say, I love you. This is step three, the detective work. Remember, you're not doing this because of what the person is or does, but because you want to please God's heart. Keep that uppermost in your mind all through the study this morning. You're doing it because you want to please God's heart. There is a saying, what good does it do for you to say, I love you, if it's not the way I need to hear it? Now, don't take that home and reverse it and use that on your husband. I'm going to pray that God just really talks to you very strongly in the middle of the night if you do it. Don't say, well, you're not saying I love you the way I need it, so it isn't doing any good. I'm not here to correct husbands or change husbands. I'm here this morning as an older woman to train and school the younger women, right? And this is just for you. But what good does it do for you to say to him, I love you, if it's not the way he needs to hear it? That's why books on marriage is setting forth how to love your husband just don't minister to every single wife and why it doesn't work in every single marriage. I have a friend, and I think I've shared this before, whose husband thinks she is her most desirable when she wears a great big Mother Hubbard flannel nightie. He just is, he just can't leave her alone. It's just, you know. Now, for most husbands, I don't think that is exactly what they desire. But for her husband, it is. Now, she might read in the book, Put on the Baby Dolls and the White Boots, as one of the books tell us. That is not one of my favorite books, by the way. And he might just go, yuck, what happened to you? You know, he wouldn't be interested in her if that's what she did. But he just loves the flannel approach, so that's, you know. There's a man named Judson Swihart, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, who wrote a book that I recommend you buy. It's called How Do I Say I Love You? And it is so good on this. He writes about the language of love in marriage. Often the wife enters speaking French and the husband German, he says, in an emotional sense. And I know some of you in the room have had that happen. Most of you have. Unless you hear love expressed in a language you understand emotionally, it will have little value. It is the primary task, he says, of every marriage partner to discover the languages that are used and then learn to effectively communicate feelings and attitudes of love. It's like buying a gift for someone. When you buy a gift, you think about them, what they're like, what they could use, what they would enjoy. If their favorite color is blue and their most hated color is gold, you don't buy them some gold-painted gift, do you? You buy them something in blue if it's something to wear. And so in marriage, if you're going to say, I love you, watch your partner, see what places he needs you to say, I love you, and how he needs it said. He talks about an executive who was always giving his wife gifts, and he said, words don't mean a thing. It's action that counts. And his poor dear wife was saying, I don't know what the gifts mean. He won't tell me he loves me. She wanted words, and that's typically of most women, but there are some that like gifts too. How we determine when someone loves us began in infancy, and it goes on through childhood. Now, this is how you want to be loved. This tells you how you got the way you did. By the way we are loved by parents and others close to us, we write our definition of the language of love. We have chosen one or more means of communication that we will accept and use as indications of love. We develop this yardstick, which we will use the rest of our life to measure how much we are loved. And we continually need to know. Marriages and relationships are not static, they're dynamic. And we go all through our life today wondering if he loved us as much as he did then, or if he loves us more, if our friends are still as much our friends as they were. There's just that some quality within us that we want to know. I believe every wife wants to be assured that she's loved by her husband. It's very important to us. It's interesting that most of us spend our time measuring how much we are loved rather than measuring how much we are loving. Wouldn't it be better if we took our rulers and turned them the opposite way somehow and we measured how much love we're giving out rather than how much we're receiving? John Powell, in The Secret of Staying in Love, says, if I love you, this is the detective work, I have to be constantly reading your needs, watching you with a look of love. I must be asking, what do you need me to be today, this morning, tonight? Are you discouraged and in need of my strength? Have you said that to your husband? You don't say it in those words, but you just look at him. And if he's down, you just kind of encourage him and say those things that just make him feel better. Are you discouraged and in need of my strength? Have you experienced some success, and are you inviting me to rejoice, to celebrate with you? Some wives just cannot rejoice with their husbands. They just can't celebrate. There's something within them, these resentments and these walls that have been built up. Or you're thinking of him and you're looking at him, or are you lonely and need only my hand softly in yours? Have you ever just walked up and just taken your husband's hand and just held it? When I used to play the piano in church, I remember Sunday morning after Sunday morning, Chuck and I would not have much chance to talk. He gets up very early on Sunday morning and we just go kind of different ways. And as he would walk by the piano, we may not have had a chance to hardly say hello, but he'd always put his hand on my shoulder and just give my shoulder a squeeze. And it said more than an awful lot of words. It was a way of communicating caring and love, and it took the place of an hour's conversation. It was precious. Have you put your hand in your husband's, just walked up and taken his hand? Do you do that in church sometimes? Just reach out and hold his hand, and it's just a way of saying I love you to him. This kind of empathetic listening and looking is one of the deepest challenges of effective love. This is the detective work. You're finding out ways to say to him, I love you, the way he needs to hear it said. And I believe many, many times that men need to hear it said differently than a woman does. To love, phileo is rather like selecting a gift, as I have said before. If you don't know how, if he's not giving clues, our God, who is our creator and is the most creative force that we know, will show you how and the need of your loved ones. Chuck, the first 10 years of our marriage was so controlled on the outside. I always thought that everything was just perfect. He was my rock of Gibraltar, and I leaned on him and felt rather dependent. And I had no idea what was going on inside. And as I grew to this place in our marriage, one day I prayed, God, show me what Chuck's like on the inside. He was brought up never to show negative emotions. And so he didn't. So if he was upset or if he was angry or any of these things, he kept it pretty much to himself. If he was discouraged, whatever. Of course, he says he's never been depressed, so, you know, and I don't believe he has, to tell you the truth, but he has been discouraged, and there is a difference. But I just didn't bother to read him very much. I just thought, well, you know, he's so secure and confident and all this. And I would say, I love you, you darling thing, you, and I, you know, my sanguine way. And didn't worry too much about whether it ministered, because I felt he was so secure, he probably didn't need it. But as I began to pray about it, God showed me ways, creative ways of saying to Chuck, I love you. One of the ways, and this is so funny, and I've shared this before, I love perfume, and I've always worn perfume, and even when we were on $15 a week, I figured out a way to get perfume. But Chuck has never remarked on it. 31 years of marriage, the only way he's ever remarked on my perfume is if I said, do you like this? And he goes, like what? You know, never really noticed. One day, one summer, I was getting very tan, and I put olive oil on my skin. And he came in and kissed me hello, and he goes, oh, what is that? He loved the olive oil. What a waste of perfume. 10 years of perfume down the drain, you know. Just use olive oil, it works. But see, I could never have figured that out for myself, nor would I have put on olive oil thinking that he would enjoy it. But God is so creative. He knew what Chuck liked, you know. We'll review the three steps quickly. First of all, you must be in a right relationship to God. Secondly, you must have agape love flowing within, cleansing and healing all your attitudes and blocks and tearing down all the walls. Thirdly, you are to search out ways to say I love you that meet the other person's needs.